standing there with an open suitcase in front of us, mentally going through our itinerary, counting up the number of days and nights we will be away, thinking about what we are going to do or what we might do. We have to make all of those decisions about what to pack for our trip. We start rummaging through the closet. What if the hotel has a pool? What if there's a free afternoon during the conference? What if we go out to eat at a nice restaurant one night? What if the nights are cold? What if the days are hot? The more we think about it, the more we pack. We throw in an extra swimsuit. We pack a flashlight for some reason, even though the hotel has electricity. We grab a Swiss Army knife. We decide to take the entire medicine cabinet. Before we realize it, we need another suitcase. That it is easy to pack and to overpack when we consider all of the what ifs. In the Gospel of Matthew, though, Jesus took a very different approach. Traveling from place to place, village to village, teaching the crowds and caring for the sick, one might assume it would be good to have lots of supplies. But he sends the disciples out to other places and says to them, "Take no gold, silver, or copper in your belts, no bag for the journey, or two tunics, sandals, or staff. Instead, they were to depend on those that they met along the way, because heavy luggage would weigh them down." And all of the what-ifs of this life can weigh us down as well. It's like that insightful poem by Shel Silverstein. "Last night, while I lay thinking here, some what-ifs crawled inside my ear and pranced and partied all night long and sang their same old what-if song. What if I'm dumb in school? What if they've closed the swimming pool? What if I get beat up? What if there's poison in my cup? What if I start to cry? What if I get sick and die? What if I flunk the test? What if green hair grows on my chest? What if nobody likes me? What if a bolt of lightning strikes me? What if I don't grow taller? What if my head starts getting smaller? What if the fish won't bite? What if the wind tears up my kite? What if they start a war? What if my parents get divorced? What if the bus is late? What if my teeth don't grow in straight? What if I tear my pants? What if I never learn to dance? Everything seems well. And then the nighttime what-ifs strike again. That we can spend a lifetime of sleepless nights on all of the what-ifs in this world. But what if all of those what-ifs keep us from taking on the journey what matters the most? That we need hope and courage. And surprisingly, hope and courage take up such little room in our luggage, so much so that if we overpack, they get lost in the middle of everything else. And Sarah knew this dilemma quite well, that even though it was good news when she heard that she would have a son, she laughed. And was it nervous laughter? Was it doubtful laughter? Was it fearful laughter? That she was overwhelmed. That even good news can be difficult at times. That we need hope and courage for the journey. The gold or silver, sandals or staff will not help. It's like Paul's admonition to the Romans. Suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character. Character produces hope. And hope does not disappoint. That Sarah would cling to that hope that does not disappoint. A hope that can even lead to courage. And if we step away from all of the what-ifs about tomorrow, we might think back to all of the what-ifs of yesterday, looking at the 20th century and all of the what-ifs, as well as the what-happens that caused such despair. As Glenn Henson reminds us, there were two devastating world wars. That even after the war to end all wars, over 60 million people died in World War II. And with all of the advances in technology for which we are grateful today, they also led to real threats like the Cuban Missile Crisis. And there were even multiple efforts at genocide, from the Holocaust to Rwanda to Darfur. And there were the enduring effects of slavery, as well as the perseverance of segregation. That there were plenty of what-ifs in the 20th century to make people lose hope and give up on courage. But somehow, the hope for God's peace and the courage of faith kept calling people forward. And despite all of the what-ifs of the 20th century, there is also a legacy of beautiful art, breathtaking music, persevering forgiveness, and inspiring efforts towards justice. It is, as Madeleine Lingle writes, all the evil that human beings have ever conceived or done is not more to the mercy of God than a live coal to the sea. That hope and courage are worth taking on the journey. And even if we do not know where we will find the courage we need, we can begin by practicing hope. That this world is a labor of love by God, so God will not let us go. That we can begin by practicing hope. As Stephen Garnas Holmes writes, dare to practice hope. Dare to let the assurance steal upon you that something is coming, something greater, deeper, not merely more, but more so. This is not cheap optimism that can be bought in any market, nor a careful figuring of odds that can always be beat, nor mindless abandon. I mean attentiveness to the dense but dappled energy that rises within. I mean willingness to be taken up, to be wielded deftly in this rough world by an art that is beyond you. You are a thread in a tapestry, too large for you ever to see. A single leaf in the springtime. Practice hope. Let summer unfurl itself in you, and then, only afterward, will you know that miracle of which already you are a living sign. It is not cheap optimism, nor mindless abandon. It is the grit of the grace of God. It is the hope that the love of God is not finished with this world yet. It is a hope that can lead to courage. Because we are a thread in a much larger tapestry of mercy and justice, hoping to draw others to the goodness of God, working towards what is most good in this world, sharing grace, standing up for justice, and celebrating the joy, the deep joy that we find along the way, that hope and courage are worth taking with us. Amen.